Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
Elizabeth Chris, and I want to thank you so much for spending 30 minutes of your Friday with me to kind of catch up on what is going on in Congress. And let me tell you what, as you all know, this week has been a doozy. I mean, it has really been active in Congress. So I want to thank you again in advance for spending 30 minutes listening to Congress College. Tell your friends, tell your family. Congress College airs twice weekly. On the Monday show, it's usually 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On the Monday show is when we usually outline the week, and that means we are going to talk about literally what will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and what will be up on the floor of the House of Representatives. And then usually on the Friday show, which of course is the time frame you're listening to right now, this is when we typically recap the week. And we talk about, what did they actually do? Did they do what they said they were going to do? How about the House of Representatives? Did they get the bills done that they said? Were you pleased with the way they represented you? Same with the Senate. You know, I do the show twice weekly, so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because think about it. Those guys and gals in the Senate, those members of the House of Representatives, they're supposed to be representing you. They're supposed to be representing me. They're speaking for us. So don't you think we should at least know what they're up to? Well, that's my view, and that's why I do the show twice weekly. I also do the show to familiarize folks with the free website. And you know what? I pledge it always will be free. That's grade.gov.com. The website, gradegov.com, lets you grade none other than members of Congress. You get to grade your senator. You get to grade your House member. Actually, you can grade whoever you want. You could go grade Nancy Pelosi. You could grade Harry Reid. You could grade Mitch McConnell, even if those aren't your senator, that wasn't your senator or your House member. And, of course, when I say grade, I mean the grades just like we got in school, the A, B, C, D, or F. I know there's lots of F's floating around. It's a really simple site to use, folks. You figure out who you want to grade. Then you figure out what grade you want to give them. And then the site will prompt you to write a letter explaining why you gave the grade. And the site actually auto-prompts all the way up to Dear Senator So-and-So. Gives your name, your username, your zip code, so that the member of Congress knows if you're from their district or state or not. Anyway, it's a really, really user-friendly. I encourage you to go on to gradegov.com, check it out. But you know what? I would appreciate if you tell your friends and tell your family. All right, I'm almost done with the housekeeping, and I say this at almost every airing of Congress College. I promise the show will be easy on the ears and plain for the brain. So let's get started. Man, we got a lot going on. First of all, I'm going to start out with the Senate of the United States. You know what they did? You know, all we're going to talk about, or a lot of what we're going to talk about, is the House of Representatives. But, man, the Senate did or failed to do something, I think, really big, folks. And that is they failed to advance the Sanctuary Cities bill. They got two Senate Democrats. But that's not enough. You all know. Congress College listeners know that 60 is the magic number. That's the vote needed to get anything really out of the Senate if there's any objection, because the Senate has a rule where the minority has a right to filibuster. And in order to break a filibuster, you need 60 senators. Basically, the rule says you need more than a majority. They want a supermajority to try to break a filibuster. And the idea is, so that the minority will have a voice in things, so that the minority doesn't get run roughshod over. So you need 60 votes for almost everything in the Senate. They didn't get it. What did the bill do? It would withhold federal funds, lots of federal funds, to local governments if they don't cooperate with federal officials on immigration laws. And you know where this is going. This is going where they had the horrible, horrible murder of Kate in San Francisco. She was on the pier with her dad, shot dead, and it turned out the culprit was an illegal alien. And San Francisco is a sanctuary city. Basically, it means that the city's going to look the other way. If you get arrested, they're not going to ask you, are you here illegally? They're not going to ask any of that. They're going to pretend like it doesn't matter. So this bill needed 60 to get out of the gate, to get on the starting block, if you will, and that didn't happen. Marco Rubio really, really captured it well. If you get a chance, Google Marco Rubio and sanctuary cities, and you'll get a pretty good couple of interviews with him. They were too long to play on the show, folks. But this is right up his alley. You know, I like to say it's in his lane. You know, he's married to an immigrant. His parents were immigrants from Cuba. As he said, he lives, all his neighbors are immigrants. He gets this issue. He gets this issue. So anyway, the Senate failed to do that. And then they talked a little bit about some defense authorization bill language. We're going to talk about that because the president vetoed it today. And then they ended up doing playing around with a cybersecurity bill that will spill over into next week. All right, let's flip over to the House of Representatives because that's where basically all the action was. First of all, the Speaker, Paul Ryan, the Republican from Wisconsin. We know him as part of the Romney-Ryan team from 2012. Paul Ryan, who is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, has said that he will go ahead and accept the nomination, if you will, not quite a nomination, but accept the offer to run for Speaker, and that election is next week, and on the full House, they'll end up voting next Thursday. All right, here's what he said in a dear colleague there. This is Paul Ryan. What are our differences? We're all conservatives. We're all elected to defend the Constitution. We share the same principles. We all believe America is the land of opportunity, the place where you should be able to go as far as your talents and hard work will take you. So Paul Ryan is going to give up the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. That's the committee that writes the tax bill, and boy, that was a tough decision for him. He's got tax bills that he's been working on, writing, constructing. He really wanted to reform the entitlements, and of course that means Social Security. That means Medicare. That means Medicaid. That means a lot of the other big programs. He had some really good ideas. And as Speaker, you don't push legislation. You push the trains along the track. So he's not going to potentially get to do that. Congressman Brady will end up taking over for Congressman Ryan on the Ways and Means Committee. After it happens, we'll do a little bit on soon-to-be Chairman Brady. But in the meantime, the House will vote on its next speaker next week. So by this time next week, we will know who the next speaker will be. All right, let's flip over to the Select Committee on Benghazi. I know that's what a lot of people want to hear, or at least watched a lot of it and have their own opinion. Well, my opinion is this has been the best week Hillary Clinton could ever ask for. Seriously, think about it. Vice President Joe Biden said he wasn't going to challenge her, did that on Wednesday. Yesterday, she spent 11 hours appearing before the Benghazi panel. And she looked pretty good, folks. I got to say, she looked pretty good. Lincoln Chafee dropped out of the race, not that he was any kind of threat to her, but he sucked up a little bit of money. He was the governor from Rhode Island, former senator from Rhode Island, running as a Democrat. He said he's not running, so she really almost had the hat trick this week. And now she's at a big Democratic dinner. It's the Jefferson Jackson Democratic dinner in Des Moines, Iowa. So she's probably flying pretty high. Here are a few reasons why I think she did pretty well in her marathon testimony. First of all, the Republicans didn't really land any punches on her. They actually barely scuffed her. She looked like a fighter, but she was able to kind of stay above the fray. You know what I mean? She didn't get that squeaky, what difference make. She never had any of those moments. So she looked like a fighter. She didn't have, as I said, any kind of TV gaffes. She didn't really seem evasive. I won't go so far as to say she seems trustworthy, but she wasn't real evasive for the most part. She kind of looked presidential, folks, and she also did not look her age of 67. And, you know, I guarantee you she will use the 11 hours, the stamina, the over 300 questions, all of that to say 67 or no 67, you try to survive that. And she'll get kudos for that. Here's some of the stuff that the media said. ABC, the Get Hillary Committee did not get Hillary. How about CBS? Clinton took more than 300 questions, but what came out of it? NBC. In the GOP attempt to look apolitical, Clinton won. How about New York Times? At the hearing, Clinton lets others do shouting. How about Boston Globe? Clinton remains unruffled. Well, on and on it goes. So the videos of Gruen revealed almost, well, very little, and she held up pretty well. So I think she had a pretty good week, if you ask me. She had a red letter week. All right, let's go also to what else the House of Representatives did. They didn't just fool around with the Select Committee on Benghazi. This is a big deal, folks. The House of Representatives passed the reconciliation bill. The vote was 240 to 189. Basically, pretty much party nine. What is the reconciliation bill? And we've talked about it a lot, and I know we'll be talking about it in the future. The reconciliation bill is born out of a budget resolution. So if you don't do a budget resolution, you can't have a reconciliation bill. Remember back in the day, not that long ago, when Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi ran the joint, they didn't do any budget resolutions for years, multiple years back to back. The House and the Senate did not do a budget resolution. They could not have created a reconciliation bill if they wanted to, because they are included in a budget resolution. What does this one include? It included instructions to the appropriate committees to find certain amounts of money. So the Ways and Means Committee, they targeted five parts of, guess what, Obamacare. This is what it will repeal: the individual mandate, the employer mandate, the Cadillac tax, the medical device tax, and the independent payment board, the so-called death panels. Remember here, Sarah Palin called them that? It also will repeal Planned Parenthood. Well, the House of Representatives ended up passing that bill, as I said, 240 to 189 before they went out this week. If you look at all of those things that would be repealed, the Congressional Budget Office and the Joint Committee on Taxation says that it will reduce the deficit by about $37 billion. So that bill is on its way to the Senate. When will the Senate take it up? They may wait a while. It doesn't have to be taken up right away. It has the reconciliation privilege in the Senate, and the magic of that is it has a time limit for debate of 20 hours. Can't be filibustered, so you don't need that magic 60. You just need a majority. Likely, will the president veto it? Absolutely. So timing on when they do it, in my mind, is going to be pretty important. It chops away at Obamacare. It repeals some of the biggest parts of Obamacare. What's going on with Obamacare? Well, let me say this. Let me go back up for just a minute. Before Paul Ryan barely gets out of the gate as the speaker, he's going to have to deal with the debt limit. He's going to have to deal with funding the federal government. He's going to have to deal with things like Planned Parenthood, funding or not funding Planned Parenthood. How does he fully repeal Obamacare? Take a listen here for just a minute. This is Kevin McCarthy talking about what's going to happen with the debt limit on the floor.
We need to pass a debt limit extension. We need to pass a clean debt limit extension.
There are bipartisan discussions that are ongoing, and I'll keep members abreast and advise them as soon as a path forward is determined. I'm hopeful that we stop kicking the can down the road. In our own budgets that balance, we know the debt limit will have to be raised. That's why you quote our members saying that. We also acknowledge that it has to be solved. That's why we put a balanced budget up to pay for it going forward. That's why I'm hopeful in these bipartisan discussions that we start the down payment where we don't have to worry about raising the debt limit, that we're actually paying off the debt and not leaving this to our children and grandchildren.
What we do have an agreement on, I presume, is that the gentleman, the majority leader from California, wants to see a solvent nation. A nation that pays its bills. A nation that does not create a lack of confidence in our own country and around the world. A nation.
There you go. Well, you've got that Steny Hoyer, the House Democratic leader, and you've got Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, talking about the schedule and how are they going to deal with debt limit. And, of course, Kevin McCarthy is saying we'll deal with it soon. We hope that we can work it out. And Steny Hoyer saying let's not be irresponsible. And, of course, you got Kevin McCarthy saying irresponsible, running up the debt as much as you guys did when you were in control was partly irresponsible. They went back and forth a little bit. But the bottom line is Paul Ryan is going to have to deal with that pretty darn quick. Pretty darn quick. So we'll have to see how all that plays out. All right. Let's go back to Obamacare for a minute. Remember reconciliation? The House just passed that bill that chops away at those five major chunks of Obamacare. Obamacare's been around for 2 years. Does it seem like it's been that long? And the administration is downplaying how many people they said were ever going to be enrolled. They talked about 21, 22, 24 million. And now it's maybe 10 million. Maybe 10 million. HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services, said that 10.4 million Americans have health insurance through Obamacare. That's not what they said it would be. As I said, the White House projected in 2016 there'd be 21 million. They said in 2017 there'd be 24 million. Not there, not even halfway there or barely halfway there. Let's look at the premiums. You think maybe this is why? The premiums in 2016 are going to probably choke a lot of people out of having to try to have no health insurance. First of all, the penalty. The penalty in 2016, if you do not have health insurance, is $695 or 2% of your taxable income, whichever is higher. This is someone who goes without coverage for 12 months. $695, and they take it, the IRS takes it right out of your refund if you're owed a refund. Now, in 2015, this year, it's $325. Remember, the first year, it was only $95. $695 is the penalty. You know, here's the deal. Obamacare exchanges, what did they do? They attracted the people that were sick or couldn't get health care or were older. That's who signed up right away. Makes sense, right? But it makes the coverage for everybody else more expensive if that's the only people that signed up, because the young people, the people that are healthy, they're typically not signing up. I guess, are they rolling the dice and thinking the IRS is not going to find them? Because the IRS is not the swiftest agency we have, so they're not going to get fined that $695. I don't know. As I said, the sickest and the oldest are the customers of Obamacare. But they were, as a lot of people say, kind of the low-hanging fruit. They were the ones that everybody expected would run out and get insurance right away. But that's not the ones that the insurance companies need necessarily. They need the young people to keep the premiums down, and they need the healthy. So we'll have to see how all that plays out. Guess what the president did yesterday? I'm sure many of you, especially those who are in the military, know what he did yesterday. He vetoed the defense authorization bill. This is only the fourth time in the history of the defense authorization bill. It's over 50 years old, folks. He did it because he doesn't like the fact that he can't close Gitmo. The language is in there explicitly saying you're not closing Gitmo. And there's more money than he wants that he even wants to consider for Afghanistan. Now, there's also money for pay raises, but that's not why he vetoed it. He vetoed it because of the Gitmo language, and he vetoed it because of the money spent to stay in Afghanistan. Okay, he vetoed it. Remember what happens. Congress College listeners know this. The House, the body, either the House or the Senate, the chamber that passed, initiated the bill first, and this bill was an H.R., so it's a House bill. It's going to go to the House of Representatives first. And if they can override, then it goes to the Senate. Remember, two houses to override, one to sustain. So to override in the House, you need 290 votes. It passed in the House 270 to 156. Can they find those other 20? Remember, they need 290. If it were a Senate bill, it passed the Senate 70 to 27. So he'd likely be able to override. Mitch McConnell would likely be able to override the president's veto. 67 in the Senate, and the bill passed by 70. The question before the House and the Senate is this: shall the bill pass, the objections of the president notwithstanding? So, if you're a Republican, do you want the bill to pass? Yeah, you do. You voted for it. You're part of that 270. So we'll see how that will play out. That's going to happen November 5th in the House of Representatives. You want to hear what Senator McConnell said on the veto? He said the president regularly calls on Republicans and Democrats to work together to advance the priorities of the nation. We did that. Our top priority is our national security, and Congress worked together on the overwhelmingly bipartisan defense authorization bill. And he goes on to say why the president vetoed it. It will strengthen assault prevention and response. It will help wounded warriors and heroes who struggle with mental health. It'll equip men and women who serve to defend the nation. And he goes on to say the president should be highlighting his signature on this bipartisan legislation and not vetoing it. He says, Mr. President, this is simply, your partisan veto is simply unacceptable. So we'll see. The House of Representatives, November 5, will have a vote on the veto override to see if they can override it. They need 20 more Democrats than they got before. So we'll be watching that, I'm sure. Okay, so I mentioned Planned Parenthood is included in the reconciliation bill that the House passed this week. And, of course, that's defunding Planned Parenthood. They take out all the money that the federal government gives Planned Parenthood, and they sprinkle it to other women's health clinics throughout the country. Okay, Speaker Boehner also announced today the Planned Parenthood Select Committee. Here it is, Marsha Blackburn. She's the chairperson. Joe Pitts of Pennsylvania, Diane Black of Tennessee, Larry Buchshin of Indiana, Sean Duffy of Wisconsin, Andy Harris of Maryland, Vicki Hartzler of Missouri, and Mia Love of Utah. This is a panel that basically is going to live within the Energy and Commerce Committee, that jurisdiction, and they're going to figure out what is the actual truth behind these horrific practices. That's the point of it, to see if the House committee will investigate what are the practices. Are they actually selling the body parts like they profess to be? Apparently they are. That's what they claim to be on the videos. And then what would the repercussions be? Oh, speaking of Planned Parenthood, you know I love this. I talk about this all the time. I wish the 31 Republican governors would get together better. I wish the Republican Governors Association would come up with better game plans, because 31 Republican governors out of 50 states, that's huge. They could be doing some huge things to try to combat Barack Obama. All roads for combating Obama are not in Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, most of them should not be in Washington, D.C. Well, Governor Abbott, he's the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, he announced Monday that Texas will end Planned Parenthood participation in the state's Medicaid program. I'm going to quote him for a second. Texas has stepped forward and showed its unyielding commitment to both protecting life and providing women's health services. The gruesome harvesting of baby parts by Planned Parenthood will not be allowed in Texas, and the barbaric practice must be brought to an end. As such, ending the Medicaid participation of Planned Parenthood affiliates in the state of Texas is another step in providing greater access to safe health care for women while protecting the most vulnerable, the unborn. So basically, the Office of Inspector General at the Texas Health and Human Services Commission sent a letter to Planned Parenthood saying, sorry, no money. Actually, I'm going to quote it. Our decision to terminate you and all affiliates in Texas finds support in the extensive video evidence filmed at your facility and other Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country. All right, so there you have it. At least Texas is sort of taking the lead here. Speaking of taking the lead, I want to talk a little bit about inspector generals, but I really don't have the time to give this the time that it needs, maybe for another time. But I'll just tell you up front, 47 of the 73 inspector generals are really getting mad at the Obama administration for blocking them on all sorts of stuff. The inspector generals are supposed to have unfettered access to the workplace to try to figure out if money's being spent properly, et cetera, and that's not happening. Good, no big surprise. We'll talk about that later. Let me also mention this, too. Lois Lerner is not going to jail. Yeah, the Justice Department said that it's closing its investigation on whether she improperly targeted Tea Parties using the IRS. Listen to Governor Kasich for just a minute. This is a little over a minute, barely over a minute, and then we're going to talk presidential politics, barely under a minute. Sorry about that. Here you go.
You've all made a few people upset over your political careers. Which enemy are you most proud of?
Probably the Republicans.
Is that where this country's going? The leading candidate for the Democrat nomination is bragging about the fact that Republicans don't like her? And she's proud of that? I gotta tell you, that's a disgrace. I don't ever want to brag about the fact that I can't get along with people. I want to talk about putting the country back together again. Do you want the election that badly? If that's how badly you want it, you shouldn't have it.
Amen. All right, well, we'll hear more from Governor Kasich. He's running for president, as you know, governor of Ohio. But how about presidential politics? How about Ben Carson? He's taking the lead in Iowa. But, you know, Iowa tends to be really, really a Christian right state. He is a devout Adventist. He's a devout Christian, and he wears it on his sleeve. He wears it proudly. And I guess they're not buying that Donald Trump is or is not a Christian. So he's taking the lead in Iowa. You know what else he's doing? He's got 4.3 million Facebook fans. He took a page out of Barack Obama's campaign. He's got double that of Hillary Clinton. And here's the deal. His Facebook page interacts with about 100,000 responses, and those are shared 10,000 times. So you do the math. All right, Iowa caucus, who won it in 2012? Rick Santorum. So will it really matter if Ben Carson wins? I don't know. We'll have to see. New Hampshire primary in 2012, who won that? It was a tie between Ron Paul and Mitt Romney. Okay, when is the Iowa caucus? February 1st. When is the New Hampshire primary? February 9th. And then pretty soon thereafter you get into Super Tuesday, which is March 1. All right, I do this at every airing of Congress College. I promise to do the president's daily schedule. Here you go. 10:30 today, he had a briefing. 12:30, he went to the briefing at the press secretary's podium. And at 4:30, he goes to the Grand Hyatt for a Democratic roundtable. That is it, folks. That is our president hard at work. Speaking of hard at work, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful, blessed weekend. I'm going to leave you with the Bee Gees song, Jive Talking. It kind of fit Hillary's. And then you guys have a blessed, blessed weekend. I will talk to you on Monday, so stay tuned.